Welcome to Stand in the Gap Today with your host, the Honorable Sam Rohrer, President of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most pressing issues impacting our economy, our homes, our churches, our culture, and our daily lives from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Stand in the Gap Today, transforming the culture one heart at a time.
2 weeks ago on January the 26th on this program, we devoted the entire hour to the reality of Christian persecution. We defined what it is not. We defined what it is. We declared and identified where it is happening and who is primarily doing it. And we identified the 10 leading nations of persecution, that there is more persecution happening today than ever before in history, and the leading ideology of persecution, that of Mohammedan Islam. Now, persecution has become so bad, ladies and gentlemen, with so little being done about it, that a large number of people and organizations are beginning to work together to save persecuted Christians around the world. And today on this program, we're going to devote our time to this important issue and provide the latest information and new solutions to which you will want to be a part. Our general theme for today is this: Christian Persecution, Part 2, The Greatest Cause, The Most Timely Solution. Two expert guests will help us walk through this issue. Dr. Mark Christian, former Muslim imam. He'll be walking through us the entire program, and he's going to help describe the worst offenders and his own personal experience. Then Frank Gaffney of the Security for National Policy will join us at the bottom of the hour for the last two segments to help share a developing solution. Together, we're going to describe why it's going to require an all-hands-on-deck solution now in order to address this horrendous persecution worldwide. And with that, I welcome you to Stand in the Gap Today. I'm Sam Rohrer, host of Stand in the Gap Today, and I'm going to be joined by Dr. Gary Dull, Senior Pastor of Faith Baptist Church of Altoona, Pennsylvania, co-host of this program as well, and also the Executive Director of the Pennsylvania Pastors Network. Well, Gary, in our last program, you and I and a special guest, Dave Bailey, was with us. We talked about Christian persecution. We called it a slow-moving Holocaust. That was on January 26th. We identified then, and he did, that the worst offender of persecution today, not exclusively, but the worst offender is Islam. And the countries of Northern Africa, the Middle East, are really the areas generally where that is occurring. But today I'm going to welcome in Dr. Mark Christian. He's the founder of Global Faith Institute, to help us as we walk through the program. And with that, I welcome you now, Mark Christian, to Stand in the Gap Today. Thanks for taking time from your schedule to be with us.
Thank you very much for having me today and discussing this very important and dear to my heart topic, and it should be for every Christian across the globe.
Well, you are, you've been with us before, Mark. You speak on this issue. You speak with a level of credibility and knowledge that most people don't have. And I want to go to you right now to help us get going here, because as an Egyptian born, or born in Egypt, you were born into a Muslim family. You have shared before that some of your family members were the original founders of the Muslim Brotherhood, and that you were a very dedicated Muslim, actually becoming an imam at a very young age. I know from talking with you personally and on this air, on the radio, that you've seen a lot firsthand. You know inside and out what Islam is all about. So I want to start here and just establish this. From your perspective, do you believe that Islam, as an ideology, is the worst persecutor of Christians worldwide today? Now, if yes, why is that? And if not, then who would it be?
Yes, absolutely. Islam is the worst persecutor to Christianity and Christians across the globe and for quite some time as well. And, you know, it starts by Muhammad. If you read into the Quran, the scripture of Islam and the teachings of Islam, and it's at its core, you know, you don't have to go further into the Quran to realize how the Quran itself is persecuting and asking for persecution of Christians. If you go for the very first chapter of the Quran, which is the chapter that every Muslim has to recite 17 times a day during their five times prayers. And in that, it ends the chapter by, you know, praising Allah for Islam and asking him to never let them astray or let them into the wrong path or the blasphemy of Christians. And then it goes into different chapters and different verses throughout the Quran. It talks about how they are astray, how they are apostasy Christianity is, how deceived and wrong Christianity is all about. Some verses says that you should go and fight them and kill them. Others says you distance yourself from them and so forth. So I'm not going to go into the text, but I bet everybody got the picture. The Quran itself, Muhammad himself, started this persecution and encouraged it and teached it and taught about it throughout the scripture of Islam. And then when you look at the status of Christians across the Middle East or across any Muslim nation that identify itself as a Muslim nation, whether it is within the Middle East, you know, countries or outside of that in the Far East or even in European countries, Christians are looked at from by two lenses. The first one, they look at them as the remnants of the colonization and the enemy, and they do not share the full citizenship rights as everybody in that country. And the other thing, they are looking at them as an apostate who does not believe in the same path of Allah, and they are going to be doomed into hellfire for eternity and so forth. So when every Muslim is approaching a Christian or a Christian church or a Christian friend or a co-worker or so forth, they are looking at them as not sharing the same rights of citizenship, and they are not sharing the same destiny, and they are looked at as an enemy from within. And that is the way that, you know, Islam is always looking at Christians. And so if you have all of those in your mind, it becomes very easy to understand the level of persecution that Christians are receiving across any Muslim country across the globe.
Mark, I just have a quick question, and we're about out of time here, but as we stated on the previous program with which you were with us, it was mentioned that persecution happens often when the power of the government comes together with religious ideology. To what degree does Islam fall into that category?
Well, in any Muslim country that identifies itself as a Muslim country, whether it has been part of the Islamic Empire or have adopted Islam later on, you will find Sharia law as the source of all the law. In Egypt, even though it is a canon law, the constitution first article says Sharia law is the basis of all law. And other countries that has embraced Sharia law as their law of the land, like Saudi Arabia, Emirates, Kuwait, all of those countries. So those governments identify the persecution of Christians and giving Christians a second category citizens altogether from the get-go. But there is a whole bunch of slogans, so we should not believe in those slogans. That means absolutely nothing.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Stand in the Gap Today. I'm Sam Rohr, and with Dr. Gary Dahl as co-host today on this program, our special guest, Dr. Mark Christian. He is a former imam, Egyptian-born, and he is the founder of Global Faith Institute, which you can find at globalfaithinstitute.org. Now, our theme, Christian Persecution, Part 2, The Greatest Cause, The Most Timely Solution. When we come back, we're going to talk with Dr. Mark Christian about his personal experience growing up in Egypt, what he saw, and further expand on what you just heard from him just a minute ago.
Christian parents want their children to excel in spiritual growth and educational achievement. Both are essential for future success in an increasingly complex world full of moral and economic challenges. BJU Press Materials place great value on the knowledge of God in His works. They teach critical thinking skills your child will need to get along both now and in the future. BJU Press Materials are available for grades K to 12. From the earliest grades, they teach biblical Christianity as a system of God-revealed truths. BJU Press Materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. Teachers' editions assure that instructors have the plans and extra tools to keep your child engaged and excited about learning by teaching your child how to analyze, evaluate, and ultimately create new solutions. And that's just what today's workplace is looking for. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
Here's what Dr. Jimmy DeYoung has to say about Stand in the Gap.
But I just feel compelled. This is an unsolicited testimonial that I want to bring to your audience. This opportunity that the people listening to you have to reach this nation with the truth, the biblical truth, constitutional truth, has to be taken care of. The American Pastors Network, there's no parallel in all of America with that. The 425 radio stations, I mean, that's an unknown. And I don't know that anybody had put that kind of a network together to do what these guys are doing. And it's got a true focus as far as a talk program. Look at here. You've got a former politician who would probably still like to be a politician. You have a pastor of a church, and you have an itinerant evangelist that travels all over the nation making impact the way he is. Folks, you got to support Stand in the Gap Radio. I just wanted to pass it along because I'm so impressed with this ministry.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today. For more information, visit our website at standinthegapradio.com.
In the book of Hebrews in the New Testament, chapter 11, verses 36 to 38, it recounts the sum of the types of persecution experienced by the faithful. Let me just read a couple of those verses to you right now, because we're talking about Christian persecution. It says this, "Others suffered mocking and flogging, and even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. They were sawn in two. They were killed with the sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, mistreated, of whom the world was not worthy, wandering about in deserts and mountains and in dens and caves of the earth." Well, later accounts are recorded in the pages of books like Fox's Book of Martyrs and other modern books. Death and suffering by Christians have occurred throughout history, with volumes written about the most horrendous types of torture and death ever imagined. From those days of Nero in Rome, where Christians were torn to shreds by wild animals in the Colosseums, to Christians dipped in tar and impaled on stakes and then set on fire as living torches, people have inflicted horrendous persecution on others. Our guest today, Dr. Mark Christian, grew up in Egypt in a Muslim family. He observed persecution. He was a former imam before finding liberty in Jesus Christ and a new view of life. And to share his personal testimony and story, I want to welcome back now Dr. Mark Christian. Mark, I want to have you go a little bit deeper if you can here. Growing up in a Muslim family and memorizing much of the Quran and Muhammad's writings, I just want to know what it was like. Did you learn to persecute Christians and Jews? Were you taught to do so? If so, how early in your life, and how did that come about?
Well, what I shared earlier in the previous segment, the teachings and the deep teachings of Islam about looking at Christians as not worthy of living, and they are less of a human beings, and I should distance myself from Christians, and that they are not as citizens and do not share the same rights as citizen as me. And all of that stuff has been deep-seated in my heart growing up. But at the same time, I went to a school that has lots of Christians around me, and I found them the most kind and the most nice and many other attributes to Christians, and that created a conflict in my heart about how to deal with them. But at the end of the day, I heard a lot about persecution and so forth, and I kind of looked at it as a crybaby thing. It's not real.
That's very interesting that you make that statement, Mark. And so I'm just wondering, if you don't mind, if you could maybe share with our audience some more specifics about what you saw and even thought regarding the persecution of Christians in Egypt. I mean, you said that you thought that they were sort of crybabies type of a thing. But can you elaborate upon that a little bit for us, please?
Well, when I was a Muslim and throughout my family and friends and so forth, you do not realize how offensive you are to Christians and how you look at them. But then when I crossed on the other side and I start looking at things and the words that have been used, it is very offensive. So, and that is not really the depth of the persecution of Christians in Egypt or any other Muslim country. First of all, people look at them with a very offensive way, derogatory ways. They use lots of derogatory kind of terms to even, you know, mention a Christian friend. You know, you mention him by a very derogatory way. And Christians are used to that, and they can't live with it. You don't realize how offensive things are. And then you look at the rights in general, at workplace, at school, in government, in public places, all of that stuff. They are looked at as a second category citizens, and they have no rights. They do not share the same rights, and they do not share the same destiny and the faith. And they are, you know, looked at as less of a human being in general. So this is a way they have been looked at. What I learned as well is the death and the killings and many other things that I can share in 4 hours about how our Christians have been treated throughout the history of Islamic history in Egypt and actually right now as well, especially in the last two centuries.
Well, Mark, what you're sharing, again, is so helpful to our listeners because most of our listeners are in America. They've grown up here. And the things you're describing, which you've seen firsthand, are things we only read about. Now, you were explaining in the other segment a little bit about what's involved. You're talking about Islamic ideology says that anyone who's a non-Muslim, a Christian, or a Jew are lesser categories of people, and therefore they don't have the same rights. And so there's already a distinction that is made there. But go a little bit further in explaining why it is that Islamic ideology is so bent on forcing all non-Muslims, including Christians and Jews, that they either must submit or be killed, and why Sharia, which is a part of that, is so unbending. Now, a lot of people here have a hope that maybe they could change the way Islam is and it believes and so forth. Is that possible? But just kind of go into it. What is that driving force that says everyone else will submit to us or else?
You know, your question is very loaded, and I would love to, dissect it and answer many of it. But number one is the prayer that I have when you are asking this question is I would take Christians in Europe and in the United States specifically and to look at how Christians are living in other nations, because the Christian or the Christian church in America in general is the most spoiled church in the history of Christianity. They have no idea what persecution looks like except what they read in the text, and it's very far from them to even to understand it and fathom, and they look at it as a very distant back in history, and nothing is like that anymore. And, you know, they have all the right to think that way because they never felt the pain. You know, I myself never felt the pain when I was a Muslim. I look at the Christians and what they say and what they do and the stories they share, and I feel like, you know what, you know, I don't believe that. I think that you have an agenda. This is why you're doing this. You need more rights. But then when I crossed on the other side and I start living as a minority myself, as an ousted person outside of the Islam and out of the Muslim, and I start seeing the Sharia from the other side, from a side of an enemy of Sharia law, and I start understanding and seeing with a complete different lens of how Christians are living their life in the Middle East and Egypt. Number one, they have no rights. Number two is they are looked as a less category of citizens. But it doesn't stop there. The idea of a dhimmi under Sharia law, a dhimmi means that you are a lower category citizen that I mentioned early. So Christians and Jews, and Christians specifically, they have to live under the rules and the regulations of Sharia law, and they're not to open their mouth. They're not to voice their opinion. They're not to ask for the right. And because if they do, they cross the line of being a dhimmi to being, you know, asking for equality. And when you ask for equality under Sharia law, your head goes off. And, you know, this is the way Christians have agreed to live for the last centuries under Islam, you know, in Muslim countries.
You know, Mark, I really appreciate you bringing up the fact that you think that the Christian church in America is most spoiled as it relates to persecution, because I believe that we are. And unfortunately, on many occasions, we don't prepare ourselves for potential persecution. And in fact, many pastors don't preach or teach about it over the pulpit. But let me just go back to something you were talking about here a moment ago about Islam and Sharia. If Islam and Sharia is so commanding of persecution, why is it that you think that the American public and the non-Muslims, generally speaking, are so dismissive and maybe even living in denial of this whole concept of persecution?
Because, you know, when people do not feel the pain and don't see it with their own eyes, they do not really understand and realize how painful it is. you know, as much as I look at the Christian church in America is very spoiled, and I look at this as a blessing to the church in many levels, not only from persecution, by the way, you know, the free thinking and many other things. You know, there is no church in America, at least, you know, for ages, they never had, you know, security at the doors because they are afraid that Muslims are going to storm in and destroy the church. There is no Christians in America that are afraid to gather in their homes and thinking that their Bible study at their home can be stormed by Muslims and destroying it. This happens every day in Egypt right now. If a group of Christians gather together for a Bible study in their home, they are considered, you know, putting a church together without a government, you know, an official permit. And that means that they are they're outlaw. They have to put in jail. And sometimes they don't even, the Muslim community do not wait for the government to act. They act on themselves and go kill everybody or burn down the place. These things nobody know about over here in America. And, you know, and this is why they don't understand and fathom what that is. And, I, you know, I myself felt the same way back in the day when I was a Muslim again. I want to, you know, highlight that. You know, when you do not feel the pain yourself, you kind of dismiss it and you think it is, it doesn't exist. And that is, was my situation when I was a Muslim. When I crossed the line and became a Christian, I started understanding because I started feeling the pain myself. My prayer that the church in America would not wait until they feel the pain to act.
Mark, what you're laying out there is a warning, is an insight that I hope and pray that all of our listeners across America today takes to heart. It is easy for all of us, which you so well said, if it, as long as it's over there somewhere, we think it cannot happen here. But what you're describing is just the opposite of it. It is very real, and that's why we've been spending time on this program on part one on January 26th talking about persecuted Christians, because it's happening worldwide. And ladies and gentlemen, yes, it can happen here just like it's happening overseas if we don't awaken soon. Our theme today is Christian persecution, the greatest cause, the most timely solution. When we come back, we're going to welcome in Frank Gaffney to join Mark Christian and Gary Dahl and myself as we pursue this area further. And we're going to talk about the persecuted Christian, a developing solution. We've got to be aware, we have to understand, and what we can do about it. We're going to talk about that beginning next week.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap today, discussing the pressing issues facing our culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. Now let's rejoin our host.
Well, thank you for being with us today on Stand in the Gap today. Our theme today is Christian persecution. We're titling this Part 2. It's a follow-up to what we did just a couple of weeks ago. We're focusing today on the greatest cause and the most timely solution. Our special guest has been Dr. Mark Christian in the first couple segments, and he's going to stay with us the balance of the program. And we're going to welcome in right now Mr. Frank Gaffney, who is with the Center for Security Policy. Now, as I set this up, and I want to move into this segment here, for far too long, and particularly under the Obama regime, the plight of persecuted Christians and Jews, particularly at the hands of Islamic faithful, was given very little attention. This has in part contributed to the nearly unrestrained increase in Christian persecution worldwide. It has reached a fever point where no civil person, certainly no God-fearing or liberty-loving person, can any longer sit to the side. We have an obligation, we believe biblically, to assist where we can those who are being persecuted for their faith. And there's an exciting effort underway in this country now, and soon to be officially launched, to help save persecuted Christians. And by so doing, to help prevent the evil persecution of people around the globe. One such person, in addition to Mark and Gary and me and many others, who has a real burden for the persecuted Christian, is Frank Gaffney, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy. Frank, thanks for joining us out of your busy schedule and for being with us here today.
It's a distinct privilege to be with so many of my friends and to be speaking to people who I know are as passionate about these issues as I am. Thank
well,
you for
it's, it is a real honor, Frank, and I want to go right into it here with you. I want to get your perspective on what we've been talking about on this program. All of us, as you said, all of us here, we are concerned about the nearly unfettered persecution of Christians worldwide. And I'm going to put in here, not only at the hands of Islamic ideology-driven adherents, but also at the hands of atheistic ideologies like North Korea, which happens to be the number one persecuting country in the world, or even in China. But I want to know from your perspective, Frank, why does it matter so much? And why does this matter of Christian persecution rise to the occasion where you feel people generally, pastors specifically, and governmental leaders must get involved and get involved soon?
Well, there's the obvious humanitarian dimension of this. As you folks know better than just about anybody, this is happening on a scale that is simply stupefying. Worldwide, as you say, it's gotten a lot of attention most recently, particularly because of the Islamic State and its murderous, even genocidal campaigns against Christians, and for that matter, others in the Middle East. But it's happening in a lot of other places besides. And the fact that it is happening on this scale, I believe, compels us to try to help, not least because we're called by Jesus Christ to do that. But beyond that, there's a strategic imperative as well. It seems to me that Christians are being tortured and raped and crucified and expelled from their homes and losing their churches and being mass murdered as well, because in part they're Christian, but also in part because they are such a direct and critical manifestation of Western civilization. And all of the people who are engaged in their persecution in the ways I've mentioned and more hate Western civilization and seek to replace it with one more to their liking. In some cases, it's hard to believe it could even be considered a civilization, notably what happens in North Korea. But it nonetheless is the view of those who are engaged in it that it's a superior program to ours, and ours must be destroyed.
You know, it's, yeah, that's absolutely true. Frank, it's a delight to have you back with us again. And this soon-to-be-announced broad-based effort to save the persecuted Christian and its need is very similar to an effort of a generation ago called Save Soviet Jewry, where Jews were being persecuted and killed by that ruthless, evil empire, the communist regime. My question to you is, how parallel now is the need for persecutions to the need for the Jews of perhaps a generation or so ago?
Well, I think it's an interesting parallel, and thank you for mentioning this initiative, and I'm so proud to be participating in it with people like yourselves and many, many more. It's time has certainly come. It's not been long overdue. And to just recall for those of you who may not have lived through this period, I remember it vividly. There were people, starting with a handful of Jewish lay leaders in Cleveland, Ohio, back in the mid-1960s, I believe, who felt that their co-religionists inside what was then known as the Soviet Union were desperately in need of help, especially as successive administrations in the United States were prepared to look the other way in the interest of improving relations with the Soviets and otherwise promoting this program they called détente. And these Jewish activists started out, they of course didn't have the internet, and they didn't have the kind of broadcasting arms of which this program is an example to promote their cause. So they simply started by putting signs outside of synagogues to start telling the story or cluing people up about the problem. And they turned it into a powerful movement. And I think it's an interesting model for our time. And as to how needed this is in our time, well, we do have, of course, the internet, the information technologies of today. We do, of course, have these marvelous Christian and other friendly religious broadcasting platforms. And not least, we have, I think, in this administration, an administration that is very favorably disposed, unlike the
you know, Nixon and Ford administrations were towards the Soviet Jewry campaign, but very favorably disposed towards trying to alleviate the plight of Christians. Indeed, the president spoke about it very directly in the National Prayer Breakfast last week. And Mike Pence, the vice president, has done the same. And the appointment of Sam Brownback now as the ambassador at large for religious freedom. These are all very important allies in a campaign that must now, I believe, begin to move nations, not just ours, but others, move nations to reach out to and help save these persecuted Christians.
Frank, I think what you're saying there is really well laid out. And Gary asked you that reference to the comparison to save Soviet Jewry. I want to ask you just to take it a step further here, because what we're talking about is bringing to awareness something of a major atrocity, it's a blight on history when you consider what is happening. And yet very few people in the United States know. Our media does not cover it. And as you're saying, when that issue with Soviet Jewry came up years ago, we didn't even have the platforms for communication like they did then, but yet somehow it took root. And that grew into a very forceful effort. Build on that a little bit about the importance of people in the pew, grassroots, as well as who else is needed in the process to make it work. What made that program, Save Soviet Jewry, work that our listeners, perhaps listening right now, can say, well, I may not remember that, but I am hearing this now. What can our listeners be doing as we are trying to present this information to them?
Well, this is so important, and I appreciate, again, the chance to talk with you all about it. Sam, as you'll remember, it started, again, in a small way. It built and built and built to the point where there were massive demonstrations taking place across the country. There were people who were engaged in acts of civil disobedience to call attention to the plight of the Jews in the Soviet Union. They were chaining themselves to the fence of the Soviet embassy and the like, getting arrested and all that. Well, as it happens, I remember this rather directly because of not only my exposure to these signs. We drive by to the synagogues and see these appeals to save Soviet Jewry and free the Soviet Jews. But I subsequently went to work for a United States senator, I'm sure you guys will remember, by the name of Henry Jackson. Scoop Jackson was his nickname. And Scoop Jackson put together, on a bipartisan, bicameral basis, a veto-proof margin behind a piece of legislation that came to be known as the Jackson-Vanik Amendment, and it prevented the Soviet Union from getting something it not only desperately wanted, but absolutely needed, namely, essentially, most favored nation status and all that would flow from that. A lot of economic, financial benefits. Really, I think of it as kind of a financial safety net. And the thing about that was, the Soviets, of course, wouldn't agree to its terms, which were, in order to get most favored nation status under the Jackson-Vanik Amendment, they had to allow free emigration, that is to say, the release of Jews and others who wanted to get out of there. And they wouldn't do it. They couldn't do it, I guess, because it would have brought down the whole place.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Stand in the Gap today. Our special guest right now you're just listening to there is Frank Gaffney. When we come back in the next segment, our concluding segment for the day, we're going to talk about saving the persecuted Christian. We've talked about its reality. We've talked about how it's happening, what's taking place, and the extremity of it. We're now going to talk about what we can do about it. And I'm going to put it in terms of this. It requires all hands on deck, ladies and gentlemen, not just one or two, but many people. We're going to talk about who those people are and what and how you can fit into that process. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Americans are a freedom-loving people. Wouldn't it be great if you could carry a copy of the essential documents that outline our freedoms written by our nation's founders in your pocket so you can refer to it every day? Well, now you can. Stand in the Gap Radio has found something you're sure to like, the Patriot's Essential Liberty Pocket Guide. The Handy Guide is a slim 6.5 by 3.5 inches, yet it includes the Declaration of Independence, the U.S. Constitution, the preamble to the Bill of Rights, and other influential documents, including, in the words of our founders, topical quotes from America's founders, plus a listing of online resources for further research by the serious-minded or the just plain curious. To see and request your copy of the Patriots Essential Liberty Pocket Guide and make your tax-deductible gift of any amount, go to AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. That's AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. Let us hear from you today. Thank you, and God bless you.
Hello, this is Sam Rohr. Although the term Christian education doesn't occur in the Bible, it does speak of the moral and spiritual instruction of children. It places a high value on knowledge, both of God and His works. It describes the moral and spiritual fruits of this knowledge and defines its ultimate purpose, the growth of your child in godliness of character and action. That's why we suggest you consider BJU Press K-12 materials. Your child's a unique individual created for a specific purpose. Proper instruction that includes the Bible and the relational influence of godly teachers produces a pure heart and a willing mind. The Bible calls that success. BJU Press materials are well written, grade level appropriate, and biblically integrated. They teach critical thinking skills and keep your child engaged and excited about learning. If you're a Christian school teacher or administrator, a homeschool teacher, or a parent who just wants your child to learn more, start by exploring the BJU Press website. Visit bjupress.com. That's bjupress.com.
You're listening to Stand in the Gap Today, the daily radio program of the American Pastors Network. For more information, visit the APN website, AmericanPastorsNetwork.net. And now, let's rejoin Stand in the Gap Today.
As we move now into our concluding segment on this most important theme today of Christian persecution, I would like to move now into what it's going to require. You know, the need to bring as much awareness to the plight of persecuted Christians goes without saying, and hopefully we've established that on this program and the one that we did just a couple of weeks ago. There's an urgency to this plight, not only because of the great suffering of the persecuted, but there is an increasing arrogance of those doing the persecuting. In reality, just as we discussed, the effort of years ago to save Soviet Jewry and to help stop the carnage and the persecution of Jews in communist Russia, so is the effort today of save the persecution needed and needed now. In my opinion, this effort is not one that just should be supported by a handful, but in the terms of former Navy men, we need all hands on deck, and we need them on deck now. So to talk about the need for all hands on deck, I want to conclude this program with practical solutions. I want to go back now to Frank Gaffney. He is the founder of Center for Security Policy, a friend on this issue, as all of us on this program are. And Frank, I want to go to you and say, from your perspective, why do we need people to be aware generally, pastors of churches, and all liberty-loving people from the grassroots on up? Why is it necessary, and how can people get involved?
Sam, if I may just ask to have a minute to finish the thought that I broke up on that last break. Just very quickly, because it ties into your point. When the Soviet Union was denied most favored nation status, it left it vulnerable to essentially economic warfare by another guy I had the privilege of working for, Ronald Reagan. And when Reagan used the strategy to take down the Soviet Union, well, not only were Jews freed, but so were millions, hundreds of millions of other people who had fallen under the crushing heel of Soviet communism. So to your point, I tell you that story in part because I think it is an inspiration for what can be done, even by small numbers of people, at least initially, to begin changing public awareness and to begin building a movement for action. And the way I see this, and I'm so pleased to be able to work with, you know, you, Sam, and Mark Christian and Greg and the others who are involved in this Save the Persecuted Christians campaign, will be unveiling tomorrow, in that I think it really is an opportunity to take a page out of that playbook and begin educating the American people and empowering them to do two things. One is to get involved with organizations that are already doing incredibly courageous and often very dangerous work on behalf of individual Christians or their communities in some of the darkest places in the world. But secondly, to begin building a movement, as I say, that can do what the Soviet Jewry campaign can actually have an impact on policy, to some extent ours, for sure, but also to identify and hold accountable governments elsewhere around the world that are engaged in or simply enabling the persecuting Christians. And those are two practical things that I think people can do, and I hope they'll start doing straight away.
That's excellent. Mark Christian, let me go to you right now. You've been with us the entire program, but I want to go to you. Frank just talked about public policy. We've talked about the importance of having our government's public policy take a progressive or a proactive role with other countries or other governments that are allowing persecution to take place. From your perspective, how important is it that public policy from our federal government, Trump administration, how important is that in helping to bring awareness and stopping persecution by be it a North Korea or Islamic-run countries around the world?
It is crucial and very, very important, but really the church leaders across the country and the Christians have to have the sense of the same body of those who are persecuted to encourage and to motivate the government to implement policies that will save their fellow Christians. One of the crucial things that helped initiate and motivate saving the Jews in Soviet Union was the sense of feeling the same body. They felt that their fellow Jews are persecuted in the Soviet Union, and they felt this is the part of their body they need to save them. What is lacking in America or the American church is the divide between the church. They look at the church in the Middle East as something far away and not part of their body. Jesus said, save those who are persecuted. We are all one body. So they need, the Christian American church need to feel the same sense of the same one body, to start pushing on our government to create policies to save the persecuted church outside of America.
Mark, I think what you just said there is an excellent, excellent point. We are commanded by Scripture. We understand that the body of Christ is one and that we should feel the pain of those over on the other side of the world when we become aware, even though they may not be right next door. I think that's an excellent point. We also made a point on the last program that when you have a government who has the sword and an ideology, a belief, Islam, or could be an atheistic view in North Korea, when they combine, it becomes the very worst form, the worst driver of persecution. And in almost all cases that I know of, when a government actually locks down, supported with the moral imprimatur of an ideology, about the only thing that can dislodge it is another government, or something from the outside that comes in. That's what happened in Hitler's Nazi Germany and so forth. We may be seeing that now, but that's why it's important. Mark,
yes,
you have a comment there.
Many governments, either Islamic governments or atheistic governments or any other ideology, they look at Christians and equate it with American, you know, freedom and so forth. And Christians are persecuted because they are equated with American freedom. And this is part of American church need to understand that those Christians are part of your body politically and religiously, and it's commanded by the Bible.
Excellent, Mark. Gary, I want to go to you right now. We've talked about pastors. Mark has talked about the church. I want to know from you, can you give a challenge to our listeners, to the pastors who are listening? Why should pastors in the pulpits be talking about persecution, instructing their people about it? Give us a little bit of a charge here to the pulpit, if you could.
A couple of thoughts. I would encourage every pastor to teach and preach on this concept of persecution. I know I do it from time to time on our other radio ministry, and every time I do it, I hear response from people saying, hey, you know, we never hear that from our pulpits. So, pastors, I would encourage you to search the Scriptures and see what it says about it. Also, I would encourage every pastor to become familiar with the voice of the martyrs, if nothing else. And, of course, their website is persecution.com, persecution.com. You can go there and learn about what's going on across the globe, around the world, as it relates to persecution. But for sure, don't wait until persecution comes to your front door, pastor, to do something about it, to teach your congregation about it, because it's something that's going to come. The Bible says that they who live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. And then pray for those who are being persecuted around the world. They need our prayers now more than ever before, I believe.
Thank you. Thank you, Gary, very, very much. And ladies and gentlemen, we've come to the end of the program here right now. I want to thank Dr. Mark Christian, founder of Global Faith Institute, for being with us, and Frank Gaffney, founder of Center for Security Policy. And of course, Dr. Gary Dahl, co-host, and myself here today. We thank you for listening. I encourage you, go to our website, standinthegapradio.com. Listen to this archived program there again. Forward it on to your friends. Make them aware. Help them to become aware of the urgency of Christian persecution around the world. We can play a part. We must play a part here in America if liberty is to be enjoyed here and be enacted for those being persecuted. God bless you all. Stand in the gap for truth where you are. We'll be here tomorrow.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to Stand in the Gap Today. Stand in the Gap Today is another quality ministry of the American Pastors Network, addressing the most pressing issues affecting the culture from a biblical and constitutional perspective. We take seriously the command to be salt and light and the mission to declare truth in the public square. Stand in the Gap Radio is supported through the prayers and tax-deductible financial gifts from listeners like you. Would you please consider a donation to help us increase our outreach of biblical truth? To learn more about us and make your donation, please visit standinthegapradio.com. You may also give from our smartphone app. Download the Stand in the Gap app. Search for it in your web store under the heading Stand in the Gap. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in every weekday at the same time for Stand in the Gap Today.